Morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Daf Yomi. We took an annual break, one-day break. Some Daf Yomis get together on Motzei Tisha B'Av. Okay, maybe in the future we'll do that. But in the meantime, however, we learned over Shabbos. We learned an hour and a half over Shabbos to try to get to where we should be. We're on Samech Tes. We're on Samech Tes. I'm at Aleph, and today's Daf is Daf Ayin. So today we're really going to make a push. We're going to try to get through Samech Tes and through Daf Ayin today. We really don't want to fall behind now that we're just a couple of days away from the conclusion of the Masechta. So let's get to work. We talked about the bedikas that are required during Shiv Nikiyam, right? There were two Mishnahs back to back. The first Mishnah talked about the bedikas that are required by Anida. Now, when I say bedikas, by the way, I really mean Hefsik Tahara, meaning at what point does a woman need to do an examination as she's concluding her Yemei Nida? Now, we're talking Yemei Nida in a Torah, which means after 7 days she's a Nida, whether she does or she does not bleed. And so at what point exactly does she need to do an examination to ensure and put her in a chazakah that she's no longer Becheskas Nida? Now, of course, her Nida does not actually end until the end of the seventh day, and not the evening of the eighth day she'll tovel on the mikvah, but when exactly does she need to do Bedika? So if you remember back in the Mishnah, it was subject to a machlokas, but the Mishnah is taking us all the way back to Samech Tes and Aleph, says that within one opinion, she could do it even on her second day. Afil b'shnayim l'nidasa. This is the position of the Chachamim. The Gemara wanted to know, how about on the first day? And the Gemara kind of left us off, not with a very glatt conclusion in terms of what about on the first day. But in other words, certainly on the second day and onward, she does have sick tahara, and then she finds out that she's clean. So from that point forward, she can assume that she in fact did stop bleeding. And then obviously at the end of her seventh day, Hefsik Tahara is done already, so she didn't need to do that, so she'll tovel on the mikvah, fine. Okay, good. What about a zava? Now, for us, this is much more relevant because all of our women behave like a zava. They treat themselves like a zava. B'nai Yisrael, Yechmir Latzman, Afilu Ra'u Tipas Dam Kechardal, Yosho Shiva Nikim. I did that Gemara totally out of my head, so I probably butchered it, but in other words, okay, but in other words, you understand. In other words, our women treat them, behave like a Zava Gedola, so that means that they count Shiva Nikim, so when do they need to do a Hefsik Tahara? Now, this is not exactly the same question. In other words, right, the Mishnah has put these questions side by side, but this is not exactly the same question, meaning as far as the Hefsik Tahara is concerned, so that she absolutely needs to do in order just to establish that she stopped bleeding. The question is, during the Shiva Nikiyam themselves, the seven clean days, meaning she needs to experience Shiva Nikiyam, seven clean days. So does she need to do a bedika each and every one of those days? So the truth of the matter is that the Mishnah described the scenario where she did a bedika on day one and she did a bedika on day seven. That's the case where the Mishnah described. And if you remember, it was a three-way machlokas. Machlokas between Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva. And in fact, the Gemara ranked the three opinions in terms of which ones makes most sense to us. So the position of Rabbi Yehoshua, the Gemara says, is very difficult to understand. The woman does a bedikah on day one and day seven of Shiva Nikiyam. So how many days does she now have? Two. She has 2 days, and she only needs to count five more days. Good, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehoshua. Difficult position because obviously you are now, what are you doing with those five middle days? Are you counting them? Obviously not. Well, you're not counting them. Well, how can you not count them and then count day one? Good. That makes this position difficult to understand. Obviously, it's defendable, but it's difficult. Then you had position number two, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer says, she did a bedikah on day one, day seven. So how many days does she have? So Rabbi Eliezer says 7 days. She's got all seven, meaning she bookended. She did day one, she did day seven, she needs Shiva Nikiyam. Okay, so we'll assume that all the days in the middle are also nucky. They're also clean. She may not have done a bedikah during those middle days, but so what? She did a bedikah on day one, she did a bedikah on day seven. Wonderful. So now she has a total of 7 days. Good. That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And finally, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which the Gemara says really makes the most sense. She does a bedikah on day one, she does a bedikah on day seven, all she has is day seven. Meaning, because she did not do a bedikah between day one and day seven, she has no idea what happened between day one and day seven. It could be she had a riyaz dam. She simply does not know. And so therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, a woman will only have that day seven, which means six more days to go of Nikias, which means that she would have to do a bedikah every one of those days. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Of those three positions, who do we follow like? So the Gemara says we follow like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer's position, which is if she does day one and day seven, she has all 7 days. Okay, halacha l'maisa, right? Practical halacha, is that a woman, if she did bedika day one through day seven, and only, sorry, let me say it clearly. If she did a bedika on day one and day seven, so then she has all 7 days. Now, l'chatchila, by the way, the Mishnah does not make this point, but it's obvious, and I'll state the obvious. L'chatchila, a woman should be doing a bedika every day, meaning during her Shiva Nikim, while she's counting her Shiva Nikim, so bedika should be done every day. Additional to that, the Shulchan Aruch writes, is that our minhag is, it's based on a comment made by, it's a Rishon, it escapes me right now, okay? Anyway, the Shulchan Aruch writes that a woman should do a bedika twice a day. Meaning, while counting her Shiva Nikim, the Shulchan Aruch says a woman should do a bedika both in the morning and in the afternoon, in the evening, not evening, but in the late afternoon as well. Okay. Anyway, good. Bedika twice a day. But in other words, but we're talking now about the bare minimum requirement. So the bare minimum requirement seems to be, according to Rabbi Eliezer, a bedika on day one, a bedika on day seven, and now she has now her Shiva Nikim, she has her 7 clean days.
Is that accepted by Shulchan Aruch?
Yes. Yes. Well, moreover, we're gonna go even one step further than that. Then we have the opinion of Rav. You know, Rav says, you know, this position, Rabbi Eliezer, you don't even really need a bedika on day one and day seven. Meaning, even that's not a minimum requirement according to Rabbi Eliezer. Rav says you only need to do one bedika. Now, the way he states it is, what if you do a bedika on day one and day eight? Now, day eight, right? That's after her Shiva Nikim. So really what he means by that is you did a bedika on day one. What if you did just a bedika on day one? So to that, the Gemara says, again, not the Gemara, but Rav says, she's fine. She has now successfully concluded her Shiva Nikim. Now, what's the logic behind that, the rationale behind that? So I'm going to offer something, although, as you'll see in just a moment, it's not going to explain everything. But the logic behind that is as follows. Look, she did her Hefsek Tahara before. So in other words, she's going to Shiva Nikim knowing that she's Naki, knowing that she's clean. She did a Bedika on day one. So in other words, it's going to be a carryover. In other words, if she did a Bedika on day one, so that'll simply carry over now for the next 7 days, or I should say the next 6 days. Where now, we'll just work with the default assumption that if on day one she was clean, so from days two through day seven, she'll also be clean as well. So Rav says that even Rabbi Eliezer, who says you need really two bedikas, nah, you don't need two bedikas, you'll need only one bedika. Okay, that's the opinion of Rav. Now, this was subject to a debate, but the halacha is going to go like Rav. Okay, let's pick it up in the Gemara on Samach Tes Amad Aleph. We are about 10 lines from the top of the page, starting with the words Amar Rav Sheshes. Yeah? About 10 lines from the top of the Amud. The first words in the line, Amar Rav Sheshes. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba Amar Rav Nidah Shei Frisha Batara Bishlishi Shalah. So, for us, Aleminyan Shiva Nikiyim. So, the Gemara quotes the following halacha in the name of Rav. A woman who is Mafrish Batara. Now, our terminology that we use nowadays is what's called Hefsik Tahara, nowadays. Meaning, you know, for the last 500-600 years. But in other words, if a woman does a Hefsek Tahara on the third day, so in other words, she's a Zavah Gedola. She had 3 consecutive days of bleeding during her Yemei Ziva. And then she does a Hefsek Tahara, so that day, meaning the third day where she did a Hefsek Tahara, can also count as day one towards her Shiva Nikiyim. So for us, Leming and Shiva Nikiyim, so the Gemara is first off, has a number of points. I said Zavah. If you read the Gemara carefully, so Rav doesn't say the word Zavah. He says Nida. A Nida who's Mafresh Patara on the third day can count that as towards the Shiva Nikim. So the first correction the Gemara makes is, why are we using the word Nida? That's imprecise. And it's incorrect. Nida Sfir Lamali. Lamala. Why she? A Nida does not need to count. Remember, she has no Shiva Nikim by a Nida. Shiva Nikim is only by a Zavah. Okay, so minor correction. I mean, it's not minor, but a tweaking, just so that Rav now makes perfect sense. And that is that a Zava, who has now bled for 3 consecutive days during her Yemei Ziva, now will count her Shiva Nikim. Good. So Amalei Rav Sheshes, Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba. So Rav Sheshes says, okay, now that we have a better understanding of what Rav says, Rav Sheshet says, we really have no understanding of what Rav says. Rav is making no sense whatsoever. Not no sense, but there's a fundamental problem with what Rav said. Do you see what happened? On the third day, when she concluded bleeding, so she did a Hefsek Tahara to make sure that she stopped bleeding, and that day can be counted towards her Shiva Nikim. That day, what do you mean that day? She was bleeding that day. It's only the next day where she can start counting her Shiva Nikim. And not only that, if you remember earlier in the Masechta, somewhere in the Lamed, Lamed Gimel, Lamed Dalet, Lamed Gimel. I just cheated. I looked at Rashi. The Gemara in Lamed Gimel says the Kusim would do that. Meaning the Kusim would use one day where she finished bleeding, she started her Shiva Nikim on that very same day. They would double dip. But that the Kusim did that. Right? But the traditional Jew would not do that. In other words, they knew, they understood that it's only the next day, which is a full day, could be counted as day one of her Shiva Nikim. So now the Gemara of Rosh Hashanah says, I don't understand Rav. He sounds like a Kusi. And obviously, it can't be. Can't possibly be. Amalei Rav Sheshet, Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, Rav kikusai amra l'shmaite. The Rav's starting to sound like the Kusim. Dami yom sheposekes bo sofer l'min yeshiva. That the day she stops, she can count as day one of Shiva Nikim doesn't make sense. Ki kama Rav labar mishlishi. So the Gemara, again, corrects, and the Gemara says, no, what Rav meant was, aside from the third day, excluding the third day. So in other words, she'll count Shiva Nikim on the next day. So now when all said and done, we clarified Rav, we changed the word needed to the word Zava, and we didn't mean you start counting on day three, it means you count after day three. Good. Now when all said and done, what's the Chiddush? It's all obvious now, meaning what Rav is saying is something that we all knew already, which is a woman is bleeding three consecutive days, she's now a Zava Gedola, assuming it's during her Yemei Ziva, or Bizmanenu, that would be any woman who sees any bleeding. So when does she start counting her Shiva Nikim? The next day. Great. All this information we knew already without Rav. So what's Rav telling us that we didn't know? So So now we're going to have really an unbelievable Chiddush within Rav. Meaning where we start off by saying, what's Rav teaching us? It seems obvious. Now the Gemara says, well, here's what Rav's teaching us, and it's a tremendous Chiddush. And that is, she'll start counting tomorrow as day one of her Shiva Nikim, and she'll count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and she'll do an examination on day 7. And that would be her only examination. The only examination that she did was on day 7. Now, previously, we said, according to Rav, a woman could do one day examination. Which day? Day 1. And I explained it, and it makes sense in the sense that once she does an examination day 1, she sees that day 1 is clean, so the carry is over now from days 2 through day 7. But now the Gemara is introducing a tremendous Chiddush that even according to Rav, she only has to do one day of examination. It doesn't even have to be day 1. It could even be day 7. And the Gemara says, "Kigon de lobat kashvi vashmin nasam tchlasam afa pishein sofam v'hachik kamashmalan sofam afa pishein tchilasan." The Gemara says, here's what your Havamina would have been, which is, I would suggest, intuitive. Right. If she did a Bedika on day one, so now she has what's called a Chazaka. She has now an inertia, a basic assumed position, which is, she's Naki. She did a Bedika on day one. So therefore, day 2, what's her status? Good. And it'll say that until day 7. But I might have thought that if she didn't do a bedika on day 1, and now she 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and she's counting, and only on day 7 she's doing a bedika, I might have thought, well, how is that going to help? She didn't do a bedika on day 1. Right? How do you know there's Shiva Nikim? That's the Havamina, which I would suggest to you is a very strong Havamina. The Gemara says, Kamash Malan. The Gemara says, you're fine, we're good. No problem at all. Okay, and so now, what the Gemara has now introduced to us is the idea that even according to Rav, who is within the position, Rabbi Eliezer. So let's try to get all this straight. Rabbi Eliezer is the accepted halachic position that a woman only needs to do a bedika for a Shiva Nikim. Again, this is, we're talking about minimum requirement, meaning lichatchila, a woman should do a bedika every day. And as the Shulchan Aruch pointed out, really twice a day. Okay, but minimum requirement is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, day 1 and day 7. And now what we're learning is that according to Rav, it doesn't even have to be day 1 or 7. Now the way we're going to say it, based on what the Gemara just said, is either day 1 or day 7. And as the Gemara pointed out, you can easily understand day one, because day one then provides for us a chazaka for this woman, which will carry over for the next 6 days. Day seven, harder to understand, difficult to understand, because she didn't do a bedik on day one. Now, mind you, by the way, she didn't do a bedik on day one, but let's all remember, she did do a hefsek tahara. She did do an examination to make sure that she finished bleeding at the end of the third day of her Yemei Ziva. So it's not like she's guessing. She knows she stopped bleeding, but day one she didn't do a bedika. Day seven she did do a bedika, and that would be sufficient, that would be enough. And then the truth of the matter is that the Rishonim, I believe it's a Ravid, okay? Don't quote me, even though I'm on tape. So I believe the Ravid says that it doesn't even have to be day one or day seven, meaning now the way we're really distilling the Chiddush of Rav, meaning it doesn't even have to be 2 days. It could even be 1 day. And the Ravid says it could be any day of her Shiva Nikim. It doesn't have to be day one. Doesn't have to be day seven. It could be any day during her Shiva Nikim, as long as she does one bedika during her Shiva Nikim. So again, as a minimum requirement, as an absolute necessity, that would work. Eni. Now, the Gemara is going to ask one question. It's just going to be that this one question, together with its complementary answer, is going to take an entire Amud. After we get through this, I assure you, Rav's position is not going to be revoked. It's not going to be upset. Rav's position is still going to stand. What I just said is correct and accurate, meaning the halacha is like Rav, that a woman only needs to do as a minimum requirement one bedika, either on day one or on day seven, or according to the Ravid, any day in between as well. There's only 1 day minimum requirement of bedika. And now the Gemara is going to take us through this question. This question is going to be complicated, as this question is going to harken back to the good old days where we talked about a woman who came back after not knowing what happened. She had a baby. Prior to her having a baby, she was maybe a Zava, and she was totally confused as she came back to us. And the question was, well, how does she behave herself? How does she treat herself as she comes back to us? Do you remember now? The case was further than complicated where she came back. There was no bleeding for the first 3 weeks, and then there was bleeding week on, week off for the next 10 weeks. Okay, we don't have to recall all the details in the scenario, and the Gemara is just bringing it over here just to attack Rav. Okay, so the only bits and pieces that we need to remember about this case. If you want to review the case, you go back to Daf Chav Tes, where the Gemara discussed this case at length and in detail. Oh yeah, was it fun? Okay. In the meantime, however, so ini v'haki also Rav and Amar Meisav Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina Toa v'lo yadana mighty yuftei. So if you remember, the Gemara back in the good old days brought in a question based on the Braisa of Toa, and I didn't know what exactly he was asking. Now the Kaimalan. Now if you remember, Shavua Kama Dasila Kaman. So again, the girl came to us and she's telling us that she doesn't remember much of her history. She knows she had a baby. It was a miscarriage. She doesn't know if it was a boy or a girl. And it could be that she was a Zava going into the birth. And we simply do not know. Now, if you also remember, there were a lot of toveling in the mikvah. Now, there's a basic debate in the Gemara earlier whether a woman needs to tovel just to be with her husband or tvila bizmana mitzvah, that every single opportunity that it could be the right time for her to tovel the mikvah, she should, because tvila bizmana mitzvah. We're going to assume the position of tvila bizmana mitzvah. The kaim alan shavu kama daisa kama belilusim at bilala biyamama lo mit balinan la. Okay, now, the first week after she comes back, so every night she'll tovel the mikvah. Every single night. Why? Because there's a possibility that the baby was whatever the baby was. And it could be that this is the conclusion of her tumah, to which she's going to have to tovel now in the mikvah. So every night of that first week, she'll tovel in the mikvah at night. But she won't tovel during the day. Now, why won't she tovel during the day? Because she may have been a zava having come to us, but we simply don't know. Okay. So, but remember, the zava, when does the zava tovel? During the day, not at night. Right, the need to tovel is at night. The zava only tovels during the day. So she comes back to us. So why not have her tovel every day? Because this may be the conclusion of her ziva. Well, as we know, we've gone over many times, the zava needs to count shiv nikim. When does she need to count shiv nikim? Lifaneinu. Well, I'll get to that point in just a moment. I jumped the gun just a little bit. But when does she count? But in other words, okay, how many days does she need to count Shiva Nikim? She needs to count 7 days. So the Gemara says, so for that first week, there's no way that she finished counting her Shiva Nikim, and so therefore, she doesn't need to tovel during the day, because she'll only be toveling in the day after week one, only starting with week two. So the Gemara now assumes the following. Now, according to you, Rav, her count, her sfurim, her days of counting, they don't have to be in front of us, according to Rav. Now, why does the Gemara assume that? So, part of the reason why the Gemara assumes that is because, according to Rav, she doesn't even need to be doing bedikas. Remember, according to Rav, she only needs to be doing a bedika only one day. And as we just learned in the Gemara, which day could that be? Any day. Day one, day seven, right? Perhaps any day in between. So in other words, according to Rav, what comes out clearly is that if there's no bedika requirement, so obviously there does not need to be a conscious, yeah, I counted that day. Meaning as long as that day is a day clean, free of blood, so it could be a day counted towards the Shiva Nikim. So now the Gemara is asking, according to Rav, it could be that the conclusion of Reshiv and Nikiyim actually is occurring during week one. During week one, not after week one. And so therefore, according to Rav, she should be doing her bedikas during the day as well, during week one. Again, not because necessarily she'll be permitted to her husband. Remember, she simply doesn't know. But based on the fact that Tefillah Bezman HaMitzvah, and based on the fact that any one of those days during week one could potentially be the conclusion of a Shiva Nikim, so therefore she should tovel during the day of week one. Okay? So be a mama nami nitbaline. So the Gemara says, Dilma Yola Zachar Bezovi va Avdala Sipurin. So and the Gemara just concludes this question and says, look, could be she had a boy, could be that she was a Zov, could be that she already counted her Shiva Nikim, all this according to Rav. So Alalash Maminabi Nitzfurim Befanenu Valav. I'm sorry, Sfurim Benefanenu. So it must be that the author of this braisa does not agree with Rav, and this is therefore a question on Rav. Now the Gemara could attack this question in so many different ways. First of all, we could point out that Rav has the right to argue with a braisa. We could say that. The Gemara, however, if it has another way to attack the problem, the Gemara will go with another direction. Here the Gemara goes in a different direction. So the Gemara says, okay, but if you remember earlier in the Masechta, we did point out that the author of this Braisa subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. And it is true that according to Rabbi Akiva, you need Sforim Bifanenu, that when she counts her Shiva Nikim, they have to be conscientious countings. They have to be done Bifanenu in front of us. Not literally, but meaning while she's aware of what's going on. After her haze and her fog has now lifted, and she's now back in the community, and she's now realizing she needs to count, then and only then does the counting actually count. Anything historically that happened before that simply does not count. That's the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva, and the author of this braisa subscribes to Rabbi Akiva, and Rav does not subscribe to Rabbi Akiva. Did not. And the Gemara says, and is there a braisa that explicitly states that the counting of Reshiv Nikiyim does not need to be conscientious counting? The Gemara says, you bet there is, Ditnan. The Gemara quotes the following. Now it says, Ditnan, it is a braisa. There is no Mishnah like this. It's a braisa. Tosham Ruyamecha Tame Reisi. Okay, the woman is confused. The woman does not know if she is during her Yemei Ziva or Yemei Nida. Okay? And part of the reason why the Benos Yisrael were Machmir Na'atzman is because it's hard. It's hard to keep track whether they're Nida, whether they're Zava. So, okay, so that's what led to the Chumrah Rabbi Zera and the Benos Yisrael. But prior to that, in other words, we're learning a Braisa right now, so we're talking about where the women did segregate her Yemei Ziva and her Yemei Nida. And this particular woman was confused. She did not know whether she was during her Yemei Nida or Yemei Ziva. So now, what's her story going to be? She's going to have to tovel the mikvah 9 times. Again, the author of this braisa subscribes to the idea of tefillah bezman mitzvah. So any opportunity that it could be a tefillah, she'll tovel in the mikvah, even though she will not be going back to her husband at that point in time. Now,
she can still tovel.
Huh?
She can tara?
No. In other words, no. It's just because she may be tara and it may be a mikvah opportunity, so she'll tov on the mikvah. So nine total, seven for nida, two for ziva. Bein hashmashos. Now, if it is bein hashmashos tamei reisi matbilos ayudal filos, so the Gemara says then she's going to have to tovel 11 times. Now that number 11 is a little tricky, and the Gemara right away jumps, it pounces on that number 11. Yulat yudalf ma'avida te'am rav yirmi amidifta kagon shabalafanena bein hashmashos. In other words, what bein hashmashos means is she comes to us during bein hashmashos. So in other words, that already means that she comes to us possibly day one or day two. Right? In other words, because she's coming to us on bein hashmashos, we simply don't know now.
You count it as two usually bein hashmashos?
bleeding during bein hashmashos will count as two. But here the scenario is she's coming to us at bein hashmashos. So in other words, we simply don't even know what day to count this now. Not the bleeding, but this moment that she's coming back. Belong to the previous day or the upcoming day. So now she'll tovel eight times for anida. Meaning, right, you'll do the calendar. meaning that she'll tovel tonight, because again, tonight may very well be. Here's what she's saying. I know definitively that I bled once, I just don't know when it was. And I don't know whether it was Yemei Nida or Yemei Ziva. So that may have been, in other words, so tonight may very well be the final day. So she'll tovel tonight. And the next seven nights. Because remember, because she came to us in Bein Hashmashos, that moment she came to us may not be the day prior, may be the day upcoming. Okay, so that would then be day one. So in other words, seven nights from tomorrow, she'll be toveling in the mikvah as well. So eight nights total for toveling for her nida, utlas leziva, and three times over she's going to be toveling for the ziva. Now, if she comes and she says, I know I didn't bleed at all, she has to tovel in the mikvah 15 times. Now you heard me correctly. Don't think for a moment, what did I just hear? You heard me correctly. If she says she didn't bleed at all, she has to tovel 15 times. So Amar Rava. So Rava says, that last part of the braisa, wasn't that a little bit confusing? Sure it was. I mean, all this is very confusing. But that last statement in particular was very confusing. Hai dina delo dina, dina begalche. So this is the kind of legislation where you're going to find begalchi. Begalchi, what are we talking about over here when he says begalchi? Right. Rashi says, din zesheno din, hayudanim ba'oso malkum, in the town of Galchi. Galchi was in the same vicinity, the same area as Sodom. Okay, in other words, this is the kind of legislation where you're going to find in really messed up places. In other words, and I'll give you an example. The Gemara Sanhedrin goes over this as well, the same exact example. This leitura lirechad yume. In other words, here's the kind of legislation you're going to find in the town of Galchi. If you own an ox, so now you're going to be responsible to shepherd everyone's oxen for one day. And the leis leitura, and for those of you who don't own an ox, so Lire Tre Yuma, you're going to have to shepherd for 2 days. Now, you think about this for a moment. You think to yourself, that, of course, makes no sense. Meaning, I understand shared responsibility and communal responsibility if I have shares in the community. But if I don't have shares in the community, then I have additional community responsibility? Now, maybe you can argue. But it really, in other words, from a simple shareholder position, it doesn't make sense. If you have shares, you understand how you have responsibility. But if you have no shares, you should have more responsibility. So Isramelu Yasma Bar Malasa Yavile Ture. So there was an orphan who happened to have been the son of a widow, which makes perfect sense. I mean, in other words, that's why he's an orphan, and. So they gave him all the oxen to take care of, even though he owned nothing. And now this orphan, who understandably is already an upset individual, and the Torah tells us that you have to have extra rachmanos for the orphan. So obviously this town of Sodom did not have any rachmanos for him. And they handed him all the oxen. They said, okay, you take care of it. Azol nech. I'm sorry. Yeah, yavi leitore azol nachsinu. And what did he do? So he shechted, right? The word lechasos kisui means cover, but in certain circumstances, it also means to shecht. So he shechted all the oxen, and then that's not exactly taking care of them, or in English vernacular, right? He did take care of them. So amar lehu, and now taking all the carcasses of all these oxen, he flung them right into the middle of the town center, and he made the following proclamation. I have a new law that I would like to enact. The isle turi lishko chad mashcha, and the isle turi lishko tre mashcha. Well, those people who own an ox, they're entitled to one hide. And all the people who don't own any oxen, they're entitled to two hides. Amre lei my hide de kamart. So they looked at him and they said, well, that doesn't make any sense. And obviously we all know the point that this child is trying to make. Well, it makes just about as much sense as the original legislation. So, look, if you were heaping more responsibility on the people who don't have, so aren't you allowed, or don't I have more entitlement to the people who don't have? So, hachanami, so here also. So, the Gemara now, after telling us this story, the Gemara... taking a couple of lines, but still making a very good point. The woman who saw for one day, so how many times did she need to tov on the mikvah? Perhaps 9, perhaps 11. The woman who didn't see at all, she tov was in the mikvah 15 times? That's the kind of legislation that you're going to find in Sodom. In other words, what the Gemara is pointing out is it can't be correct, and we're going to have to correct it. Hachanami, umah hech damaris, shagalei betisha, I betisha tzvilos, I be yadal tzvilos. Okay, so a quick correction of what we meant. The reisi ve'eni yodea kama reisi. So here in the second case of this braisa, she saw. She knows she saw. She doesn't know for how long. And furthermore, she also is telling us, I know I had a reiyah. She had a discharge of blood. She doesn't know for how long the discharge went. And furthermore, she also does not know whether it was during her Yemei Nida or Yemei Ziva. Matbil Anosa, Tezvav Tfilos. So now she goes for a total of 15. Asai Kaman B'Yamama Yavin Leishev L'Nida V'Tamne L'Ziva. Now, she comes to us during the day. Now remember, for her Nida, when is she concluding her Nida? Well, again, she doesn't know. When she bled, and she doesn't know how long she bled for. But she knows both. She knows she bled, and she knows that it could have been for one day or more. At least one day. So when is the conclusion of her nida as she comes back to us? Could be that tonight's the first, is the conclusion. Could be tomorrow night. And v'chula v'chula, and that will extend for the next 7 nights, including tonight. Which will be the end of her nida. But also remember that she could be a zava. Now, because in other words, again, she admitted she bled for more than one day. Could be that she bled for 3 days, which now is going to have her required to count Shiv Nikim. V'tamne l'ziva, so she's going to have to tovel 8 days for her ziva, meaning today and the next subsequent 7 days after today. Now, what comes out clearly from this braisa, right, if you're following, and I know this is tricky, and I know this is complicated, but what comes out clearly from this braisa, if she's toveling today for her Shiva Nikiyam, so when did she count? Right. In other words, during her fog, during her haze, during her period of, I don't know what happened, right? And nevertheless, that counts towards her Shiva Nikiyam. So whose position does this accord with? The position of Rav. Meaning Rabbi Akiva doesn't agree. Rabbi Akiva says that she has to count bifaninu, meaning while she's back and while she's conscientious about counting, that count counts. Any count prior to that doesn't count. But this braisa that we're just quoting now is within the position of Rav. Good. So the only reason why we brought this entire braisa, as complicated as it is just simply to support Rav with another Tana. Now, what if she comes to us at night? So Yavin Leitamel Nida. So now she needs 8 nights for Nida because she came to us at night. So could be that she bled right up until this very moment in time. So tonight's not going to be the first night of Renita, but it could be. So she'll tovel tonight, and the next 7 nights after that, v'shev l'ziva. So 7 for ziva. Now the Gemara says 7 for ziva. Ziva tam nabaya. Elad idav idav shev l'nidav tam l'ziva. So the Gemara says no. 7 for nida and 8 for ziva. Be'leilusa tam y'linida by ziva. I'm sorry. Vitamna leziva belelusa tamya. Tamna lenida. And if she comes back at night, so she's going to be 8 for nida. So the Gemara says by ziva. De psika le de loshna ki asi kaman bi amama loshna ki asi kaman belela chashiv la nida de lo psika le de ki asi kaman belelusa by tamya bi amama lo kave tamna lo kachashiv la. Now the Gemara says now as far as Nida is concerned, it fluctuates. It depends on when she comes to us. Meaning, if she comes to us during the day, it's only then going to be have to be set the next 7 nights where she's going to have to tova for Nida. However, if she comes to us at night, it's going to be tonight and then the next 7 nights after that. So, in other words, by Nida it fluctuates. By Ziva, it does not fluctuate. All right. But, and again, the larger point that we're trying to make over here is the fact that she's toveling for her Yemei Ziva means she counted Shiv Nakim and she does not need to count in front of us. Meaning, why is she toveling the following eight days for her Yemei Ziva? She didn't count. So it must be that the days prior to her coming to us do count, even though she didn't count them. She doesn't require Sforim Bifanenu. And that supports Rav. So v'had the titva alash, I mean not Rabban Nehi Dar Melo Beinis for Lefaneinu. Good. And that's the whole reason why we brought the Brisa. Just so now we could support Brisa based on that. We could support Rav based on that Brisa. Okay. Amalei Rav Acha Brei de Rav Yosef Rav Ashi Love to Ritzik Amitar Tzina La. Now, the Gemara would like to deflect, as you know, the Gemara enjoys doing, meaning the proof is not absolute. Ve'emahachi. Safarti, kama safarti. Meaning, look, you already tweaked the Brisa. We needed to tweak the Brisa because remember, the Brisa, as it was originally presented to us, made no sense. So if you're tweaking the Brisa, so, you know, in other words, we could tweak it in a slightly different version, slightly different manner, and then the Brisa would not come as a support for Rav. Meaning, we could say like this, Tritzvei Mahachi, say like this, Safarti v'ene yodeh kama safarti. Imi me nida safarti v'imi me ziva safarti. So in other words, maybe what she says as she comes back to us is, I bled and I counted. So in other words, that could be part of what her declaration is. In other words, she's telling us, I know I counted, but I'll be honest with you, I don't remember how much I counted. So then, so the Gemara says, okay, but even if that's the version of the discussion, well, if we know she counted, so at least, in other words, we don't know how many days she counted, but if she's saying she counted, at least count one day towards the count, which means that she's only going to need another 6 days, not another 7 days. So So that's going to take one away from her tefillah, and then the magic number won't be 15. Okay, so the Gemara says, well, maybe the case is where she comes back to us, she said like this, I bled, I don't know how long I bled for, and maybe I counted, maybe I didn't count. I'm not sure. That's why the Brisa is going to tell us that she'll have to tovel every single day on account that this may be the final day of her Shiva Nakiyam. Because she's telling us maybe she counted. But on the other hand, she's also admitting, I'm not even sure if that's true. Maybe I didn't count at all. And so that's why she's going to have to go through toveling in the mikvah the day she comes back and the next seven subsequent days after that as well. Okay. Adkan. So in other words, when all said and done, meaning that was a lot of Gemara too, but it was in its totality, the whole purpose of the last Amud of the Gemara was to challenge Rav, because Rav says that when a woman counts, it says she does not need to count conscientiously, meaning a simple, as long as you go through the days, that's enough. How do I know that? Because Rav says that she only needs to do a bedika on the seventh and final day. Okay, and by the way, again, that's the accepted halachic viewpoint, which is the position of Rav. And this is all within the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara quoted the Braisa of Toa again, which seems to go against Rab, because that Braisa says, you need Sforim Bifaneinu. The Gemara acknowledges, you're right, that Braisa goes against Rav, but that Braisa goes like Rabbi Akiva, and Rav doesn't go like Rabbi Akiva on this regard. Rav goes like Rabbi Eliezer, and then the Gemara quoted another Braisa, which presumably, seemingly also agrees that you do not need Sforim Bifaneinu. Okay. Next, we start now the new Mishnah. Hazav Hazav Avanida Ve'olez V'amitzor Shemesu. So I have a man or a woman who is a Hazav Hazav respectively. A woman who dies as an Ida. A woman who dies as a Yoledes, meaning Betumas HaYoledes, or a Mitzorah, and they all die Mitamen B'masa, so they give off Tuma through Masa, meaning the remains of their body give off Tuma B'masa. Now, your immediate reaction to this Mishnah, as you read this Mishnah, is, what? What? Any Jew who dies is going to give off Tuma, and they're going to give off Tumas Maga, and Tumas Masa, and Tumas Ohel. So your immediate reaction to this braisa is, why do I care that when they died as a Zav, as a Zava, as a Nida, as a Oledis? What does that introduce to us in the world of Tuma? Okay, in other words, and moreover, let's even further advance this question as we're about to answer. Let's further advance this question. Meaning, when a Zav dies, so, right, as part of their... Right. In other words, when you sign the death certificate, in the world of Tuma, does it matter that they were a Zav right before they died? I mean, honestly, no. In other words, the Zav is now a mace like anyone else would be a mace. Right? Meaning death is the great equalizer. So, in other words, the person's dead. So the Tuma that they had as a live human being, meaning that they were either a Zav or a Zava, once they're dead, they're dead. And so why there's no carryover Tuma of the Zav and the Zava. Essentially, to put it simply, what's the Mishnah talking about? It's such a basic question. Stay tuned, because the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. And when does this Tuma go away? Achimok Basaro, until there is the beginning of decomposition of the body. Now, we know when it comes to Tumas Mace, we know you need full decomposition of the body. So over here, at the beginning of decomposition, so this Tumah goes away. Again, right now, the Mishnah over here, we really don't know what the Mishnah is talking about. Stay tuned as we're going to discuss. Now, when a non-Jew dies, so he's not going to give off Tumah anymore. Okay. Now again, this Mishnah is very difficult to understand. Meaning, we know that when the remains of a non-Jew gives off Tumas Magad, gives off Tumas Masa, and whether or not the mace of a non-Jew gives off Tumas Ohel is subject to a machlokus amongst Tanayim. But we're not talking about Tumas Ohel right now. We're talking about Tumas Masa. And once the non-Jew dies, he no longer gives off Tumas Masa. What? In other words, again, this Mishnah is difficult to understand. And we're going to understand the Mishnah very well in just a moment. Beishamei omrim kol anashim mesos nidos, ubeisil omrim einida elosh mesos nida. Now, when a woman dies, what's your default assumption? So Beishamei says the default assumption is she died in nida. Okay, and he says that universally. Now, of course, that's very difficult to understand, especially if a woman dies in her older years, where she's already undergone menopause. It's difficult to understand Beis Shammai's position. And Beis Hillel says, but by the way, later on in the Gemara, we're going to defend Beis Shammai's position very well. And Beis Hillel says, no, you only say that she's an Ida only if you know that she died as an Ida. But without knowing otherwise, you do not assume that the woman died as an Ida. Now, my b'masa, ilem b'masa mamish, the Gemara asks the obvious question, adu kol meis milom metame b'masa, every single mace gives off to masa. By simply carrying the human remains, you are now going to be subject to becoming tame, because the transmission of tuma from the mace is metame b'maga b'masa b'ol. So what's our Mishnah talking about? So the Gemara says, ela my, yeah, Elamatame Mamasa Elamai Bemasa Be'evin Misama. So when our Mishnah talks about Masa, it's talking about Evan Misama. Now, first of all, the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Daniel, "Dirchsiv itesi Evan Chada v'shumas alfum guba." Now, the pasuk in Daniel, sixth parak of Daniel. Daniel now is speaking in Aramaic, so you know how this sounds to all of us. It sounds like Aramaic. I often think, I've said this before many times, I often think I know Aramaic, meaning I've gone through a little bit of Gemara. Okay, a little bit more than a little bit. But in other words, right, and it's funny, you really don't need a big vocabulary, a big Aramaic vocabulary to go through Gemara. The words in the Gemara, the amount of Aramaic words in the Gemara is really minimum. So you want to know if you know Aramaic, so do the following. Read Targum on Chumash or read Sefer Daniel. If you're following, if you know Aramaic, you'll understand. If not, you're going to be lost, totally lost. Okay, so try this at home. Sefer Daniel, after about the second or third parak of Sefer Daniel, it just transitions straight into Aramaic. It's pure Aramaic. And you'll see if you know Aramaic. Okay, I tried it. I realize. My Aramaic is terrible. Terrible. So anyway, but the Gemara just quotes that in order to introduce us to the idea of Evan Misama. Anyway, but let's get to the point. The point is like this. Bayezava, they convey a special tumma. Now, we talked about this tumma once before in the Masechta, so forgiveness will be given if you don't remember. Okay? This tumma of Evan Misama is like this. It's talking about a very heavy stone, a very large stone, which is placed on a chair or on any item which is used to sit on to lie down upon. Now, the chances of you picking up that stone are very small, very minimal. But if a Zav were to sit down on that stone, which is on top of another chair, so he's going to convey Tumma. Tumas Masa, meaning it carried him. Now, even though we would only say that by something where normally I would pick up and walk away with, and I would not normally say that regarding this large stone, but because the Zav and the Zava give off what's called Tumas Medris, so once they sit on an item, that item will become tummy. Not the stone. The stone is a stone. But the item below the stone is going to become tummy because it supported the Zav, which was on top of the stone, who was sitting on top of the stone.
Even after death.
Okay, now,
is that true for the mace? Regular mace?
This is not true for a mace. Because a mace is only going to become tummy if there's a chance that it's going to support it, meaning that I would pick it up. But over here, because there's a large stone on top of it, so therefore it does not transmit tumma through masa. Now, as the Gemara is about to point out, look, the establishing time of death is always tricky. Okay? I speak medically, I speak halachically. It's hard to establish the exact time of death. So therefore, you have a zava or a zava who is lying down on something, and not directly on the bed itself, not on the chair itself, but on the stone on top of the chair. While alive, the chair becomes tamei. After he's dead, min ha-Torah, the chair is no longer tamei. Because he's no longer a zav, he's just a regular mace. But because we don't exactly know when that point is between alive and dead, so the rabbis legislated tumma midrabanan, and they said that if a zav dies, we'll still give him the status of a zav, so that in this scenario, which is limited, admittedly, but in this scenario, the chair under the large stone is still going to become tummy. So in other words, the special tumas masa that we afford a mace, well, we don't afford it, the Torah demands that a mace gives off the special tumas masa, Evan HaMisama, he'll continue to give off that tumma even after he's dead, and as a tumma derabbanan rabbinically legislated, for the simple reason that it's hard to identify when that precise moment of death is going to be. And the Gemara says that in one line. The reason is that he may collapse, right? And people will think, oh, he's dead. And it turns out that the rumors of his death were highly exaggerated. He wasn't dead.
How does that help?
It's not a question of helping. This is not a help issue. This is a tumma derabbanan for fear that he's actually not dead. Rabbi Lazar Omer Achibaka Kreso, and by the way, when the Mishnah says that that he conveys tumma until this special tumma, by the way, now it's not just regular tumas mace, but it's tumas evan amasama. He conveys his tumma until he starts decomposing. The Gemara over here gives a very graphic, detailed account of what does that mean. He starts decomposing until his stomach opens up.
Person in a coma?
No, he's alive.
Because it says here, living but unconscious.
That means he's alive. Ove kochavim shemeis tanya amar Rebbe mimnei ma amru. Ove kochavim shemeis tar malatame b'masal. If he shen tomasal mechayim midivrei Torah. Ela midivrei sofrim. So the Gemara quotes, by a non-Jew, he does not give off this tumah. Now you remember we said earlier in Masechta, every non-Jew rabbinically is given the status of a zava and a zava, right? We talked about that earlier. But remember, that tumah to begin with is only midirabbanan. So now to extend that tumah to after he's dead by a Jew, the tumah is extended. But by a non-Jew, since it starts off, the tumah starts off as being a tumah derabbanan, so therefore, once the non-Jew dies, that's it. He's not given any extension of tumah, even midrabbanan. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Shnaim asad varm shalu anshe Alexandria es Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chinana. There were 12 topics of discussion discussed between the members of Alexandria. Now, I assume they're not Jewish. Okay, that's the assumption. They were scholars, very smart, but I assume they're not Jewish. And they had a discussion with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya or Chinana. Okay. And we're going to divide the 12 topics, Gimel Devri Chachma, three areas of Halacha, Gimel Devri Haggadah, three areas of Haggadah, Gimel Devri Boros, three really foolish topics of discussion, and Gimel Devri Derech Eretz, and three topics on how to properly conduct yourself. Okay. And let's see if we can go through just a little bit today. Gimel Divrei Chachma. Now, why does the Gemara bring this up now? Because the first topic discussed between Rabbi Yehoshua and the Anshei Alexandria is exactly what we just got done discussing. Okay, exactly what we just discussed in our Mishnah. That the special tumah Evan Misama is afforded to the Zav who dies until his body starts disintegrating. Okay. That was topic number one. Topic number two. Bas Mishulachas Mahi Lekoin. Okay, topic number two is the following. You know that a man divorces a woman, so he has a chance of remarrying her. Machzir Grushaso. In fact, it's a mitzvah to do so. Okay? Under a lot of circumstances not to be recommended, but obviously there's a reason why they got divorced, but give it a second go. I actually know somebody who tried it, Machzir Grushaso, married his divorcee, and in my one anecdotal story, I could tell you it didn't work, unfortunately. So it's certainly not recommended at all times, but okay. However, if after the divorce she marries another man, so then he can't remarry her, and I'm talking specifically about even after she divorces her other husband, obviously. If she doesn't divorce her other husband, that's called having an affair. That's called adultery. Right. So even after she divorces her husband, she cannot return back to her first husband. The Torah speaks in very strong terms about this prohibition. The Torah refers to it as a toeva. Okay? It is abominable behavior. Okay? And to which now The Gemara now poses the following question. This is the question posed by the Anshei Alexandria to Rabbi Yehoshua. And they want to know the following. Let's say he does exactly what I just described. Divorces his wife, she remarries another man, divorces that other man, he remarries his divorcee, which he should not have done. And the Torah describes it as a toeva. It's an abominable behavior. But he does it. And they have now a child, a daughter. Can this daughter marry a Kohen? Can this daughter marry a Kohen? So, the Gemara now analyzes this question. Mi amrinan kal v'chomer, uma alman al-Kohen gadol shein isura shava b'chol b'napagam. Look, an almana marries a Kohen gadol. Now, can an almana marry a regular Kohen? Sure, no problem at all. A grusha can't marry a Kohen, but an almana can marry a regular Kohen. An almana is only prohibited to a Kohen gadol. And she marries a Kohen gadol. Now, what becomes of that child? That child is a chalala. That child, that daughter, cannot marry a Kohen forever. She's a chalala. And even though the relationship between mom and dad was a prohibition, but a limited prohibition, it was only she was usher to dad, but she's mutter to any other Kohen. Zushi isura shava b'chol. Now, this isser that this man violated, remarrying his divorcee after she remarried another man, and divorce the other man. So this is an isser that is universal. This is true for anybody. So ain odin shebena pagum. So over here, by violating a universal isser, by marrying a woman that under no circumstances no one's allowed to marry, so the child should be a tainted child. Maybe what you could do is you could say, well, maybe the case of the Alman is different because she herself becomes a chalala in marrying the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says, Amar lahen. So his response is very clear. He toeva the ain banah to avin. The Gemara says, she is disgusting, meaning when the Torah describes the machzir grushas, so the Torah says, ki soeva he. She is disgusting, but the child is not disgusting, meaning that the child that comes out, even though he violated the Isser, is not tainted. And so the child of a Machzir Grushaso can in fact marry a Kohen. The child is not a Chalala. Okay, stop over here.